اهلا وسهلا مرحبا
Marcus Sahaba Online Radio.
Adam Kamda, I tell you, Tobela was very keen on listening to you much earlier. So he's given you maybe 3 or 4 minutes extra on your segment of fishing. Adam Kamda, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning?
Wa alaikum salam, Shafad. Yes, lovely crisp morning in the middle of summer.
But it seems like I can't hear Adam. Okay, I can hear you. I can hear you. Sorry, Adam. It was my audio button was muted. Sorry. Assalamu alaikum. How are you doing, Adam?
Walaikum salam. Yes, lovely morning on the Durban beachfront. The weather forecast was on cue. It's overcast with a little bit of rain. It's lovely and cool. The swells are big, so I can count about 30 surfers out there. But I must tell you, it's a day for the experienced surfers, not for the beginners. And these guys are absolutely loving it. They sit around waiting for about a minute or two until the set goes up. And then you see some absolute cracker of swells coming through with the surfers riding tubes and the bodyboarders also getting in on the action. And life, it's life as usual, Shafad. Even with the rain, there's joggers on the beachfront, there's cyclists, there's people walking around. It was raining a little heavy about 5 minutes ago, but now it stopped, and it's an absolutely beautiful day on the Durban beachfront, Shafad.
I like your description there, but once you're addicted to the ocean, come rain, wind, or storm, you just want to get in there. In your case, if it's rain, wind, or storm, you can't go into the ocean with your boat, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, I'm always close to the water, but when the forecast is for rough seas, I expect that and I stay away. Because as you know, going out to sea on a small vessel can be quite dangerous if you are chancing it, in doubtful weather. So as much as we're so passionate and addicted to the ocean, but we show it the respect and stay on land, you know, when it says, you know what, guys, take a rest day today.
Absolutely. And as you said, there are certain people that are daring, and they're actually daring nature. I mean, you find these people, they created the rocket and they say the Challenger and the Titanic. And you know what were the consequences? You're actually challenging. I mean, you're challenging. You mean, who are you challenging? And the Titanic, this is unsinkable. That jet or that rocket will never explode. And these things all happen. But, when you are on your boat, when you're going past the breakers, and this morning I was motivating the people with the spirituality, but silence is golden, Adam, because I know when you're out there, there's not a lot of chattering. It's all cool, calm, and collected, and just focusing on the ocean and looking at nature at its pristine purity, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, you hit the nail on the head. When you head out to sea, and, you get quite far out, you stop the engines and you're floating around. There are some really unique sounds that you hear there that you don't hear on land. It's usually the lapping of the hull on the waves and just the swoosh of the water under the boat. And people, maybe you hear a friend just cast a line out. You hear the line whirr through his guide and the sinker plop into the water. And it's really a unique experience apart. It's quite zen. It's really soothing. It's therapeutic. You can go out to sea with lots of worries, but once you're out there, your mind is clear. And when you come back, you feel very, very refreshed, and it's very soothing, Shafad.
Well, people, that's why why Adam is cool, calm, and collected. He's connected, people. He's connected. Then, Adam, we see so much of advancements in fishing. We're talking about drone fishing, and we're talking about new types of hooks. Even though hook has evolved, I couldn't believe that. But then you still find those people still do the primitive fishing. Like they'll jump out of the old wooden boat with a spear in the hand, and they'll go for, will they go for a tuna? I don't know what they go for. But the primitive fishing is still prevalent in some islands. Adam, talk to us about it.
Shafad, you get the development of tackle advancing really fast, and then suddenly you find it's like come around full circle. When you talk about deep sea fishing, initially the only type of rod that was available was a bamboo rod, and you use very rudimentary guides on these rods, and you fish from a boat. And then you progressed onto these really thick rods with heavy gear, 100-pound line, 100-pound braid, with a large KP, with heavy sinkers trying to get to the bottom to fish. And now, with the introduction of slow pitch jigging, this has been developed in Japan because basically through overfishing, fish had become very scarce inshore. So the guys had to travel far out to sea with boats, and they actually developed a style of fishing where they use a metal lure on a very thin rod. They actually call them noodle rods, very, very light rod, small reels, very thin braid. And even the braid, you know, the deeper you go, the thinner braid you use because it needs to cut through the current to get to the bottom. And I've been experimenting with this style of fishing in the recent weeks and absolutely loving it, Chapat. You don't get exhausted lugging around heavy tackle. You've got one light rod with the selection of lures that you can send down. So you can say it's come full circle from the thin rods at the beginning to the really heavy tackle recently, and now it's migrating back to the absolute light tackle. And the challenge, Shafad, is to catch the absolute biggest fish possible on the lightest tackle possible. So on some of my rods, I've got 20-pound line, and on one of my rods, I've even got 10-pound line, and I'm waiting to hook that real monster and pit myself against one of those big fish in the sea with 10-pound line, Shafad.
Alhamdulillah. And then, you know, I was just alluding to the fact that everything has evolved, and there's always improvement in the tackles, the type of rods you're buying, and, you know, technology playing a major role in fishing also. But talk to me about the evolution of the hook. I mean, I don't know. I must have, the last I fished, I must have been a teenager, but I believe that the hooks have evolved, Adam. Fill us in.
Yes, Shafad. In terms of hooks, there's lots of technology involved. They use certain coatings like Teflon to make it more slippery. So when you set the hook, it slides into the fish much easier. You get a much quicker hook set. But this is actually quite dangerous, Shafad, because when you're handling it on the boat, you can easily hook yourself. These hooks just grab onto anything. But I think the biggest change in terms of hook evolution is going from a J hook to a circle hook. A J hook is obviously a J shaped hook, and the point is quite proud. You know, when you bait your hook up, the point of the hook, it's quite obviously easy to penetrate the fish. But if you look at a circle hook, it's similar to a J hook, but the tip section is actually turned in towards the shank of the hook itself. So logically, you would think to yourself, you know what, this is not going to hook anything. It's like the point is like not even going to be in contact with the fish. It just wouldn't work. But the point of that, of the circle hook, forgive the pun, is that once the fish swallows your bait, it doesn't get gut hooked, which means if it swallows it deep, the circle hook will not hook the fish inside its gut. What happens is as you put tension on the line, that circle hook basically slides out of its gut towards its mouth and turns and hooks it on the corner of its mouth. And the advantage of this, Shafad, is that in recent times with more focus on conservation, people are doing catch and release. The circle hook allows you to hook the fish in the side of its mouth, and you can easily de-hook it and release the fish. So that's the biggest change that you would see physically on the, you know, like visually on that hook, and even the manner in which you use it. And it's mostly used, like, for example, with shark fishing, so it doesn't bite you off, and you can just hook it in the corner of its mouth, land the fish, and easily release it. But more and more, we are seeing smaller and smaller hooks used in all manner of application, even on a deep sea trace, Shafad, where you use a series of circle hooks. And when you reel your line up, and there are certain species that you're not really targeting, you can easily de-hook it and release them unharmed to the ocean. It's not a case of this fish has swallowed the hook. You've got to cut the line, and it's a sure death for that fish. About.
Ah, Jazakallah for that. Looking at a message on the screen, Ghaffar says, "Assalamu alaikum, Chef and Adam. It seems as if you guys are fishing at Tiger Rocks. A great chat indeed. I want to know from Adam Kamda, so many people are leaving the Durban beachfront and coming more towards our south coast. And I noticed that during the December, was it because of the feces that's going into the ocean that more and more of them are coming to the south coast, the mid-south coast and lower south coast? And why is this so? Will this heavy influx of people cause erosion and damage to the seashores?" How do you respond to Gaff there, or Ghaffar, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, we did have a serious pollution problem on the Durban beachfront, and we did have a lot of loss of income from tourists and fishermen alike. The Durban tackle shops felt that lull where people were not fishing as often as they used to, especially over the festive season. A lot of people did travel to the south coast as far south as the Port Jepson and north as far as Richards Bay to find better, cleaner fishing grounds. And as a result, Durban did suffer. But I've seen signs of the water cleaning up. There's a lot of boats launching. I've been out to sea many times in the last few weeks. Fishing deep sea is still unaffected, Shafat. So if you're a keen angler or if you're a beginner that wants to try their hand at fishing, the best recommendation I have is to go down to Wilson's Wharf. Look around, you'll see lots of charter boats with phone numbers on them. Give them a call, and you don't have to book the entire boat. You just book a slot for yourself or a friend, and off you go on a specific day at a specific time and enjoy the beautiful facilities that Durban offers, and even you know, the nature that you'd experience out at sea with seabirds and turtles and dolphins. There's all manner of things to experience out at sea, Shafat.
Yeah, Gaffar has another name. I even said gaff. You even gaff the fish, yeah. You do the gaffing and all that. But second question to you is, I want to know from my brother Adam, did he ever get hooked any time on his fingers and so forth? Because this is a common occurrence, and especially with a lot of people coming on the seashores, do fishermen tell them to move away because they're casting, and people don't move away and you hook them, who's to blame? Very good questions coming from Brother Gaffar.
Yes, Shafat, it's been a very long time, in my past. I can't really remember. I don't think I've ever had a hook penetrate, you know, deep enough that the barb got lodged in. But there are techniques to remove that. You'll find many clips of that on YouTube. But having said that, as recently as last week, Sunday, when I was experimenting with my slow jigging, I kind of misjudged the retrieve, and the lure basically flew up into the air. And being the cowboy that I am, I reached out to grab it, and the hook, the tip of the hook penetrated the center of my finger. It didn't go all the way to the barb, but I think it basically lodged on the tendon. And I pulled the hook out. It bled quite a bit, and it swelled up immediately. I got the shock of my life. I put a plaster over it. And I told my crew, Skalk, I think I need to see a doctor. That was my immediate reaction because it was turning purple. It was swelling. I thought, oh God, I'm in trouble. Yeah, I hope I don't lose this finger. My imagination was running wild and thinking that, you know what, I'm just going to lose this piece of my finger or something. It was looking so bad. Then I continued fishing, had the plaster on. The pain subsided a bit and the swelling was still there. And I thought to myself, no, I'm okay. I'm good. When we're back on land, and maybe I'll go and see a doctor. But when I got back to land, it seemed to have settled, quite a bit. And by the next morning, it was pretty much back to normal. And now you wouldn't say anything had happened. But usually, if you get a hook injury, it's advisable to see a doctor. Sometimes they'll advise a tetanus shot, and they'll treat the wound locally, Shafat.
Yeah, you mentioned the word tetanus shot because of rust. So the hooks do rust. You don't have rust-proof hooks, Adam?
Yes, Shafat. Hooks come with all manner of coatings to make it more durable. But the salt water is salt water, Shafat. It'll make anything rust. Even if you're using stainless steel hooks, Shafat, they'll still rust. But besides rust, your hook is penetrating live fish, and often there's bacteria, or even if you use that hook before and it had some organisms on it and it's left, it looks clean, but it could have some dead or decaying matter on it. So when you get penetrated with a hook, you have to take it seriously. And the other big danger, Shafat, is a gaff. I've heard horror stories of people where the skin was penetrated with a gaff and all that bacteria got in. And if they hadn't had proper medical attention, they would have been in serious trouble, Shafat.
I'm sure you carry first aid kit, and with the, I'm sure next time you'll take your first aid kit, and for hook or if something happens to me, I'm going to do this, or maybe antibiotics, and But in your case, praise Allah, that you cured immediately. And, it's as a salt water too. You know, some people get cut and quickly they wash their hands or their feet in the salt water. Is that a healer too, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, every boat does have a first aid kit on board. It's part of our annual inspection. And in my fishing bag, I've got plasters in the first compartment. So, the nature of fishing is you're always working with sharp hooks and sharp knives and sharp gaffs. And even the teeth of fish are sharp. So you've got a fish that's flapping on your deck can easily inflict a wound on your feet or your ankles or even on your hands when you're trying to handle a fish and remove the hook. So it's very important to have bandages and plasters handy. And I've used the plasters in the last few trips I've been fishing so often. So every boat is equipped with first aid kit, Shafat. And yes, it's important to keep some sort of disinfectant on the boat to be able to treat minor wounds. But as I said, you know, if it's something more serious, then reel your lines up. Don't be a cowboy. Don't stay out at sea. Head back to shore and get your medical treatment.
I can't believe the amount of messages I'm getting this morning. I think most of them are at home, Adam. Most of them are at home listening to you. Mariam Bain says, hi, Adam. I want to know from you, which is the most dangerous fish to catch and which is the most dangerous fish that can be on board your boat that will bite when it's acting like it's dead? Mariam Bain's imaginations are going wild here, Adam.
Yes, Shafaj, you know, we have such common fish that are really so dangerous, but they look so cute and docile in photographs, Shafaj. The number one, I would say, is the kuta. If you look at the teeth of the kuta, they can inflict a wound similar to a shark bite. So when you land that fish, just be very, very careful how you handle it. And then I think second would be the dorado. Even this, it looks so colorful and so playful and such an amazing sight, especially makes a great pose, taking photographs on the boat after you've caught a beautiful dorado. The danger here, Shafaid, is the dorado traces often have two hooks in them. And when you hook the fish and land it and you bring it onto the boat, you'll have one hook that's in the fish's mouth and another hook dangling out of the fish's mouth. And when they are on the deck, they are jumping and flapping like their life depends on it. Their life actually does depend on it, but they're not going back into the sea. And this jumping and flapping sometimes will knock against your shin and your calf and your ankle. And if that second hook penetrates your leg, it's going to be quite painful because it's not just a penetration of the hook through the barb, but also a tugging fish on the other end that's jumping and flapping around. So you can imagine how painful that can be, Shafaz. So you really have to take great care, not only fighting the fish, but especially landing the fish and handling the fish on the boat, whether you're holding the fish in the gills or close to the fish's mouth, or whether it's flapping on the deck and poses a threat with the other pointy hooks that are ditched apart.
So you got it there, people. Yeah, the fish, you catch it, you think, yeah, fish say, oh, you think you're clever, watch me. I'm going to get you back. And as Adam says, it's tugging you there, there's an extra hook there and it pulls. Oh, Allah, I can tell you. So in other words, Adam, it is safer to fish with gloves on and with a pair of boots. I mean, you better have boots, other than there's a dangerous fish that can bite your leg and all that, Adam.
Yes, ankle-high boots are a great idea, but remember, we are fishing sometimes pretty much the entire day, so it's not really very comfortable or practical. So it's just a matter of good fishing ethics on the boat. Normally, if you have a dorado on board, we throw a wet towel over its eyes, and that seems to calm it down. It helps us also to hold the fish securely and remove the hooks. And then you get things called like a de-hooker, which is like a looks like a plier, which you can easily hold the hook and remove the hook, Shafaat. So it's just a matter of following the right procedure and being safe and, you know, just for using these little techniques to be safe on your boat, Shafaat.
Fascinating information coming through this morning, and you people are fascinating me with all your questions. Qasim says, Alhamdulillah, Brother Shafaat, a great program indeed. I don't miss it for anything, and great to have Adam back after all his other escapades. He's writing series and chapters on the boat, Qasim. And Qasim wants to know from you, I've been fishing on rivers and dams. Am I missing out big time, Adam Kamda, not fishing in the ocean? But I still find peace and tranquility when I'm near the rivers with the ripples coming through and also in the dams. There's hardly any sound around. How do you respond to Qasim, Adam?
You know, Shafad, if you're a fisherman, you're a fisherman. Wherever there's a body of water, you want to fish it. I remember when I traveled to India, we were on a houseboat, and I asked these guys, do you have any fishing rods? And they looked behind the door, and they showed me these two branches from a tree with like a meter of nylon on it with a rudimentary hook at the end. I looked at it and said, yes, that'll do. And then the next stop where we stopped at, somebody was selling prawns. It was actually prawns for eating, but we bought a few and we said we'll fish with it. So, you know, a fisherman would want to fish anywhere, and you get that thrill of fishing, whether it's fresh water or salt water. But having said that, Shafat, I'll give you, talk about the experience of my good friend Yaqub, who is a master fisherman in the Durban Harbour. And watching all the videos that we've posted on YouTube recently, he was curious to know what is it like fishing at number one and catching bonitos, etc. And so I shared the spots with him, gave him a few tips, and he came out, he ventured out to sea, I think about two or three times already in the last 2 weeks. And he's having absolutely the time of his life. He says it's such a fast bite. The tuna, the bonito is a tuna family. It gives such a strong fight, and he's really loving it. So he'll cut his teeth at number one, and then soon he'll venture out further out and try for other species as well. So if you've always just fished in the rivers, I would highly recommend going out to sea, because the number of species that you can encounter out at sea is so much more vast, and the fish are so much more powerful. And even fishing at number one, Shafat, we fished on Friday morning, catching bonitos shot for shot. Then Lionel put out a live bonito to try and hook maybe a kuta that's around, and it got picked up by a big shark, and unbelievable. Skalk Sun joined us for the first time. I think it was the first big shark that he caught, so he was given the honor of fighting this fish. We got it all on video. An absolutely awesome fight. And even when that came up to the surface, Shafat, we saw other sharks chasing this shark as well. So there's always unpredictable excitement and enjoyment out at sea. And I'd highly recommend, you know, if you're a river angler or harbor angler, venture out and enjoy what's right on our doorstep, Shafat.
I'm tempted to ask you, you know, we know Tiger Rocks has been named, you know, that's in Swingo Beach, after the tiger tooth shark, if I'm not mistaken. What are the most common sharks that we get here in the Durban areas or near the harbour, so forth, Adam?
The most common shark, I'd say, is the grey shark. They don't grow that big, and they're often caught by anglers from the shore. Then you get the black tip reef shark and Zambezi shark, etc. Shafat.
Then this, I don't know if it's a old wives' tale, but they say if you take a baby shark, a tiny shark, and you put into your tank, it will grow to the size, you know, that the tank allows it to grow. How true is that, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, I've heard that as well, and it just shows how your environment confines you. And if you think about it, you know, it would be unnatural for the shark to outgrow the tank, and then it can't basically sustain its own life. But give it the freedom of the ocean, it can swim freely and eat free, and you know, it would grow to its maximum potential, Shafat.
Well, are you thinking laterally or horizontally or vertically? You know what I'm getting to, Adam.
Thinking out the box.
I mean, it's your choice. If you're going to swim in the pond, you're only going to think like, you know, how the fish in the pond thinks. And if you're going to be in the tank, you'll be thinking like the fish in the tank. But in the ocean, Adam, there's it. The wealth of information coming from you is because you're so connected to the ocean. You see what I'm getting to, Adam?
Yes, that's true, Shafad. If you can use the analogy to your own thoughts, you know, if you're really boxed in with a set way of thinking, you can basically limiting yourself, and you can only grow so much. But if you open your mind and you explore all various possibilities, then you know the world's your oyster, Shafad, and you can really grow to your full potential.
I don't have oyster with me, people. On the other hand, I've got a whale of information coming from Adam Kamda, our very own fishing guru and fishing professor. Now, Adam, you sent me that picture. You know, that were those pompanos or dorados, I mean? Because you told me some tuna, and now whilst you're talking about the dorados or the pompanos, I'm getting confused here, being the family of the tuna. But that was an amazing catch. How many dorados or pompanos you caught that day, Adam?
Those fish, Shafat, I sent you the picture of our catch. It's actually, the proper name is Eastern Little Tuna. It is of the tuna family, but it's commonly called honey in our local waters, Shafat. They're quite abundant in our summer days, and we're really having good catches in our recent trips. And these are used predominantly for as bait from shore angling, Shafat. So it's really a prized bait. It has a very strong scent in the water, so when you cut it up and use it as cutlets on your bait, you can cast it out and get all manner of fish eating it, from sand sharks to gray sharks to even Kinokuta will pick that bait up, Shafat. And even those bunnies used from boats, Shafat, trawled behind the boat, is an amazing bait for the big kuta. Even wahoo will eat that. Tuna will even eat that as well. So it's really a prized fish as bait. But having said that, I have heard that it makes good eating, so I haven't tasted it yet. I'm really keen to catch a nice size one, Shafat, bleed it at sea and bring it back, keep it on ice, and actually try it. I've actually Googled some recipes to see how to cook a bonito, Shafat.
Farooq says, Assalamu alaikum. I'm just thinking aloud whilst Adam Kamda is talking. Why would someone go to Southwest Africa or Mozambique and other places out of the country to fish when Adam has a whole paradise of the Indian Ocean to fish? How do you respond to Farooq, Adam?
That's so true, Shafat. You know, we love traveling to Mozambique. But in recent years, the schlep of going across the border, getting currency, getting another, you know, paying on roaming on your cell phone, all the costs when you meet the port captain to register your boat, register your crew, buy fishing licenses. There's so much of negative, you know, things to hold you back. Although we love Mozambique and the environment and the species of fish you would catch there, but the obstacles that humans have placed between us and the fishing waters is becoming insurmountable. And, you know, some of my friends asked me recently, so Adam, so where did you go to on your holiday, you know, this December? I said, you know what? Durban is my holiday. Getting on my boat and getting out there, that is my holiday. That is my pleasure. And I can have my holiday every week if I want. So that's true, Shafaj. You know, you can really enjoy the local waters. And I am an ambassador for Durban. I would recommend everyone to experience the Durban Ocean experience. Whether you're a fisherman or whether you own a boat or not, if you have no experience or no fishing gear whatsoever, just phone the fishing charters, book with them. They'll provide the tackle, they'll provide the bait, they'll provide the skipper and the boat. They'll take you out there and they'll give you an experience that you've never experienced anywhere in the world, Shafat.
Now, Adam, how often do you and your good friends go out on a weekday? Because, I mean, when you're going out, and it's usually early in the morning, because that's when the fish are really hungry, Adam.
Yes, Shafat. Previously, I used to wait for the Sunday. As you know, I'm quite dedicated to my work, so Sunday is my day off. And I had to, now the Sunday had to coincide with a good weather day as well, to be going out at sea. If it is a bit breezy, then I'll go sailing. But if it's a calm day, then I'll go fishing. But lately, we've latched on to this style of fishing from, in the middle of summer, it was from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. And then when you come back, basically, you've got the whole day ahead of yourself. And you can still get to work in time and, you know, get a solid day's work done. The last few trips have been like from 4:30 to 8:30. And as the days get shorter, I suppose, you know, our hours will move up a little bit later. But, yeah, this is the style of fishing, Shafat. So I can happily fish on a weekday or on a weekend and absolutely loving it, Shafat.
Alhamdulillah, and you know, many resonate well with you when you go to the ocean, and you know, you get that feeling even when you see the different types of fish you're catching. And as you talk about the sharks, there are quite a few questions on sharks, and this one says, Brother Adam Kamda, when last has there been a shark attack in Durban? Because I'm already frightened to even put my toes in the ocean. Can the shark come right to the shoreline and take off our toes too? Adam, you respond to that. I know for a fact that you can put your toes in on the shoreline and you won't get sharks coming and taking it off. Adam?
You know, Shafat, I was thinking that very same question this morning. I was standing at my window, looking out the ocean, admiring the surfers, how brave they are to be surfing in such big waves. And I'm just thinking to myself, yes, these guys are live bait floating on the water there. and what's preventing the sharks from attacking them. But we haven't had shark attacks in many, many years on our Durban beachfront shipyard. And the water is murky. The sea is rough. It's rainy. You know, you can even hear the Jaws music in the background, but they are pretty safe. So I'd say, you know what, if you want to bathe between the flags, you've got the lifeguards there, you've got shark nets in place, and all the precautions are taken. Just don't watch the movie before you go to the beach, then you'll be very scared to put your feet into the water.
I mean, forget it, when you watch that movie, and I watched it, I was frightened to jump in the bathtub. I mean, that's how paranoid that movie made me. But is it true when the shark attacks you that you must hit it straight on the snout? How true is that, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, it's got lots of sensory, I wouldn't say sensory organs, lots of, the nose is really concentrated with sensory nerves. So if you're able to see the fish, the shark, then whack it on the nose or dig its eyes out to make it uncomfortable. Don't be an easy target. But it's easiest if you're a diver, Shafat, because you can see what's happening around you. But if you're a surfer or a swimmer, then your head is above water and you're not really aware of what's for you. Feel it, then try and give it a smack or a punch and repel it, Shafat.
Well, you heard that, people. I don't know, in that paranoia and all that, what will happen, but Allahu Alam. Adam, absolutely brilliant, and Gigi Foy is screaming in my ear. She says, Shafat, recip. Adam, what you got for Gigi Foy this morning?
Yes, Shafat, I'd like to share with you the Turkish bonito recipe that I found. I'm itching to use it. It sounds really delicious, and I love Turkish food. So the ingredients would be two medium-sized bonito fish, cleaned, cut into slices, one small onion, one clove of garlic, the juice of half a lemon, about 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and salt and pepper to taste. And the preparation is so easy, Shafat. Grate the onion and garlic into a deep bowl, the lemon juice, the olive oil, salt and pepper. Then you add the slices of fish and combine it well. Set it aside for 15 minutes to 2 hours, not longer than 2 hours, because the salt will draw all the moisture out of the fish. Then you place parchment paper onto a baking dish, lay the fish out on this parchment paper, and you bake this in an oven, in a preheated oven at 200 degrees Celsius until the edges turn golden and the insides are cooked. And this, Shafat, you can serve it with roasted vegetables like onion, tomato, and brinjal, grilled on an open flame as well, Shafat. That's, and then seasoned with crushed garlic and some salt. And that's typical of Turkish food, Shafat.
Turkish food, very healthy, the Mediterranean diet, and Adam giving you a healthy, lovely, maybe good for breakfast. Adam, really enjoyed you this morning. Your parting words before we let you go?
Yes, Shafat, I'd just like to share with all the listeners that if they want to see visuals, photos, and videos of all our catches and fishing and expeditions out at sea, go to YouTube and subscribe to WR Fishing and Fishing Durban. On both these channels, you know, we feature quite prominently and share the love of our of fishing and the ocean and the love of Durban. Thanks for a lovely show, Shafat. Salams to you and the listeners.
Wa alaikum salam to you, Adam Camden. Jazakallah khair for brilliant information.